this bolt of lightning shot across the universe and inspired me with the idea that we have to do a podcast. And that's what I wanted to tell you. We should do a podcast. Okay, bye.
All right, welcome to Feature Creep, colon.
Built-in microwave, semicolon.
Petards be hoisting. Yeah, so we're so I'm Ned.
And I'm Meg.
And this is our podcast, and you can go to our website, fcbm.io, which is, you can listen to our podcast directly for free from there with no advertising.
And you don't get sucked into the stupid Spotify, whatever,
right,
the horrible online ecosystem of exploitation.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you can just get our stuff, and we won't, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, exactly. Petards be hoisting.
Hoisted by their own petards.
Yeah.
What is the definition of a petard?
It's like a hand grenade. Like it's an old hand bomb.
Hoisted.
Yeah. So lifted up into the air.
Oh yes, blown up. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Yep.
Yeah. So Shakespeare quote for sure, I think. Good question. Maybe should have done a little more research before we signed up for this particular.
Well, so, you know, this is how these things go.
Yeah.
We also were thinking about, and we'll probably get around to discussing the concept of ideas from scratch.
Yeah. So
from scratch, hard lines and gray areas.
Oh, right. I think Hoisted, not to get too far off of topic.
Yes.
The Hoisted by, I'm trying to look it up right now. The Hoisted by Your Own Petard.
Mm-hmm.
Or My Own Petard, is a phrase from a speech in William Shakespeare's play Hamlet.
Okay.
According to Wikipedia, which comports with what I thought I remembered before.
Oh, well, that's good.
Anyway, doesn't matter. but it's funny. Petards be hoisting just seems like such a funny kind of rephrasing of it to
Yes.
me. But also, I think it's kind of apt because, like, it's very likely in this podcast we will talk about somebody getting murdered at some point.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like we can't not.
Right, right. Yeah.
Like if we talk about it, then everybody's going to be like, oh, I know exactly when in history this podcast was recorded.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's like December 19th, 2024 still.
Yes.
This has been a long year. So the Hoisted by Your Own Petard is like, I think it's like very apt for just things like having any kind of public presence on the internet, very much a trap, right? Like,
yes,
you what you say and think and articulate is now out there forever.
Mm-hmm.
If it catches somebody, and I would say like, this is like the memory is like. Like people remember of you, like negative shit gets good traction, if you know what I mean. Like,
yes.
It's really hard to get good traction with positive stuff.
Unless it's kittens or cats.
Yeah.
The internet seems favorable to that.
Yes. Although I would say the memories are of the negative shit, right? It's like people don't remember the kittens. I mean, they remember that there were kittens and cats, but like.
Well, isn't there kind of like an evolutionary advantage to just like, oh, if it was good, let it go. But if it was bad, don't forget that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like it's very much the thing, right? Like survival mechanism. Like you want to have a good working memory of what's really harmful.
Right.
Everything else is either ignore it or it's food.
Yeah. Ignore it or it's food. FCBM, ignore it or it's food.
Ignore it or it's food. Yeah. speaking of from scratch, which is the other, let's segue into that, which is that, the idea of the from scratch thing would be like, we made this podcast from scratch
for you.
But that's where the, as an idiot or as a simile for the concept of gray areas, right? Wasn't that kind of the point of the
originally? I can't remember why we said simile though.
Well, is simile, not simile, analogy. Maybe that's the right word.
Oh. Well, the whole from scratch thing is like, I guess, if you have the concept of some idea or something coming from scratch or being like sui generis or like completely self-made, then like I think a whole bunch of things have to be ignored in order to make that claim, right?
Sure, right. And but also like we're not arguing against using it in common parlance where you're like, oh, if I said I made these cookies from scratch, your assumption is probably that I bought the chocolate chips. And then I bought the butter and I bought the flour and I bought the sugar.
Yeah, you had it down to simple ingredients and then you made it from those.
Right. And I used like, you know, baking powder or something as a leavening
agent. And or you didn't buy somebody else's cookies and pass them off as cookies that you made.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Right.
But where the gray area comes in, right, is like, you know, obviously there's some fucking pedant who like some fucking like 13-year-old teenager who's like suddenly figured out that like they can participate in adult conversations butts in to tell you that, well, did you grow the wheat yourself and then grind it into flour? Well, I don't know if you made those from scratch then.
Yes.
And so that's kind of my point is there's fucking gray area there. Like generally in terms of like the phrase, I made these cookies from scratch, I think generally the population's pretty much in agreement about like what that means. And no one's going to argue whether you like churned the butter yourself or not.
Sure.
You know, and yeah, maybe
so
you
there's
did.
A cutoff there, you're saying.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, it's not typically the conversation isn't revolving around whether, like, the depth of your scratch. It might be more like, as a note of interest, like, yeah, not only did I make these from scratch, but I did churn the butter.
The like, depth of your scratch. I like that. Like, how far back does your scratch go?
Like, if you're at a party, the interesting conversation isn't whether you were, like, whether a pet like someone pedantically put you in your place. The interesting conversation is, oh, you made something.
Right.
Fantastic. Tell me more about that.
Right. Oh gosh. So where do you think like the cutoff is then? So it's all just a big gray area until you get really close to the line where it's like, okay, that's enough. Like you churn the butter, you raised the cow.
Yeah.
That you then got the milk from and churned into butter.
Well,
so are we like talking cows and chickens here?
I mean, the depth of the scratch could go back to somehow being like some sort of like entity that rose from the mists of time and
the first mover.
The first mover, basically. Yeah. Like, let's just get down to it. Like, you know.
Go all the way back.
Yeah, just go more backer. Yeah.
More backer. Okay, so the depth of the scratch.
And I can tell you how I personally influenced all of the chain of events that led to this moment where I showed up and said, I made these cookies for you from scratch. Like, that's the depth of the, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But then you have to, anyway.
The infinite regress like, of scratch.
Oh, and then
cooking.
How you do this, but then you have to prove that you were of some consciousness that caused that first mover. Right. Like, anyway, or was the first mover and also still connected. Anyway. you know, like, why not just be absurd?
I'm just thinking about having this conversation with a person who isn't you.
Yeah, yes.
When they tell me that they made cookies from scratch.
Right.
And like, harassing them about how deep does their scratch go. How deep is the scratch?
How deep is the scratch? Like very one-upmanship, like very much just like, oh yeah.
Well, this reminds me of the episode of Portlandia where they like go to the restaurant and they are talking to the wait person who's telling them about their chicken named Colin and yes. where Colin lived.
And what a wonderful life Colin had. And
Yeah. Which is kind of funny because like I have done some farmers markets to help my friends sell their honey, right?
Yes, yeah.
And like there's people who raise animals for food that they kind of treat like they're pets in a way.
Yeah.
Like they have chickens and they name the chickens. And so like you get eggs that were made by Henny or whoever, uh-huh, right? You know? Yeah. And I just think like
this one's from Barb.
This one's from Barb.
Uh-huh.
Barb and Kathy.
Yes.
I just think about like how that sort of gets exploited for comedy.
Yes.
And like makes it a little more ridiculous than it really is. It's like, well, I know which chicken it came from and the chicken has a name. So.
Right. You know, right.
Whatever. Yeah. How deep is your scratch?
How deep is your scratch? I mean, how many
chickens deep is your scratch?
Right. For me personally, like on the receiving end, if somebody says I made these from scratch, I'm open. Like to me, that's just like, hey, I'm opening the door to a conversation that I'm interested in, which is like, well, how did that go? Like, what'd you do? And their thing might be like, I walked all the way to the store and I got the tube of cookie dough and I ate half of it with a spoon. And then I remembered that I was coming to this party and I baked the other half.
Nice.
Like perfectly valid from my point of view.
For
as
sure.
As from scratch. Like,
well, yeah.
You know, like, it, like also from scratch could be I really like made all these cookies and I like baked all day and then it turned out I burned them all and then the others like I stepped out the front door and spilled them all, so then I had to go buy this box of cookies from the store.
Yep.
By the way, I was lying about the first part. Like also valid, like, you know what I mean, like,
yeah,
it's fine.
It's
like,
fine.
It's great.
Fine. Somebody made those cookies.
Yeah.
How deep is your scratch? Somebody made the machine that made those cookies.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, isn't this kind of like the conservation of energy, like one of the laws of physics? Like somewhere somebody's putting in the work to make those cookies.
Oh, sure. Right.
Like, whether it's into the cookies directly or into the thing that makes the cookies or.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, then you could get into some kind of like philosophical.
Yeah.
Philosophical arguments about, the nature of like our economy and like if in an ideal world, like your efforts that you put in during the day that earned you that money that you then spent mm-hmm. on that is equivalent. Therefore, I did make these cookies.
Right. You could get real weird with it.
I mean, instead we live in a society where it's like I happen to be super rich, so I have all this wealth and power and money, and I, you know, my time is different than your time.
Right. Well, certainly much more expensive.
Right. Yeah.
So one of the like funny things that I noticed recently on the internet, and this is something that the internet can't quite agree upon.
Yeah.
Is like the whole orcas wearing dead salmon hats.
Oh, yeah.
So this is definitely a thing that they do.
Yes.
And like. This fits into our conversation about ideas from scratch, because it turns out that orcas are really good at like creating culture and then spreading culture.
Right.
So they come up with these like weird arbitrary things. Like we're all going to like wear salmon hats.
Yep.
And like swim around in the ocean with these dead salmon, like balanced on the top of our heads, like their hats.
Right. So
and yeah. And then the orcas that like start doing these weird things when they like travel over distances and run into other orcas, they like tell each other about these things.
Uh-huh.
And then the orcas that weren't part of the original group who came up with this like idea about wearing salmon hats from scratch.
Yeah.
The new pod of orcas that intercepted the original hat wearing orcas start doing the same behaviors that they've been introduced to through the other orcas. That's fucking culture, right?
Right. Yeah.
So the internet is like, oh, orcas are wearing salmon hats again, like a fad that keeps coming around.
Yeah.
And I guess like maybe the internet says that the last time that this was like a really big thing was around 37 years ago, and now they're starting to do it again. And then another group of internet people, articles, whatever, who even knows what it is anymore that's telling us these things?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, did somebody write this down, or did you like scrape this off of Google Scholar, or like did an AI hallucinate this? Like, what am I actually reading? So they can't decide whether like this is happening or not happening right now. So I just thought it was really funny whether it is or is not happening again. At one point in time, orcas did wear dead salmon hats, and they shared that.
Right.
Apparently, the like yacht sinking is another one of these cultural.
Right. Things. It's like the younger orcas who are just fucking around.
Yes. Like they said, males too. Like
okay.
So sure. Male orcas like get it, like they're kind of like when people used to drive around, I never did this, but when people drove around like in high school and like smacked people's mailboxes.
Sure, right, yeah.
Like that's kind of what it reminds me of.
Yeah.
Like vandalism, just acts of vandalism. Just
acts of vandalism.
Yes. Orca vandalism.
Right.
So who knows where that idea came from?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of funny, like it's also funny to me that so many people think that like animals don't have as complex and adaptive lives as people do.
Right.
Like there's a lot fucking going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's not, we're not actually so far away.
No. No. So yeah, from scratch ideas, even orcas have them. Or do they?
Or do they?
Like, yeah. Can you imagine if like some orca parent was having the equivalent conversation of like how people talk to their kids and they're like, oh my god, when we were young this was like a thing, and then the kids are like, what was a thing, and then they adopt the practice themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what, like I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but like it just, you get a hold of some idea, like bell bottoms coming back around.
Yeah. Or I mean, I like, so when I was in the Boy Scouts, that's steeped in that concept.
Oh, really?
Which is the older generation sharing shit that, mm-hmm. like, the younger generation then takes on. So, like, as you enter the Boy Scouts, the oldest scouts are leading the, like, it's very much about learning to, you know, improve yourself and then teaching those behind you, mm-hmm. and like being a leader once you learn that skill and then leading the people behind you to learn it.
Yeah.
And so and then they have all these like merit badges, right? So they have all these like avenues of thing. You're like, I'm doing canoeing, or I'm getting my canoeing merit badge, yeah. or first aid or camping or whatever. And you, these skills.
I like doing canoeing.
Yeah, you're doing, that's, I'm doing canoeing.
Doing canoeing.
So it's like, it's very much that, because there's the more formalized stuff that the, like, now I think they're called Scouts USA. They dropped the boy a little bit. Scouting America. But it's very much, there's like the formalized part where it's like, this is written down and these are the formulas and the requirements and how you learn these skills.
Yeah.
But then there's like the cultural part of it. Like in my troop, there were things that were handed down from the parents and the older scouts as sort of like activities that we did, like skits and things. I can't remember really many skits off the top of my head, but also like weird kind of hazing shit, right? Like we didn't do in our troop, like, I, well, you guys be the judge of this, like we did one of the things we had that definitely was like a learned behavior, or we were told about from much older scouts who were like adults who had been scouting.
Yes.
And that was this, the idea of a bear can, and the way you make a bear can is you get like a coffee can.
Yep.
And you poke a small hole in it, and you run a leather lanyard through the hole and tie a knot. So you basically make one half of a string telephone.
Okay.
Right. And the way string telephones work is you have like a taut string and it vibrates the end of the cup so you can hear the, you know how string
telephones? Yeah. My neighbors and I did them when we were
little. Okay. Yeah. So if you haven't made or used a string telephone, it's typically you get a string and you have two like paper cups or plastic cups, which you poke a hole in, and then you run the string between the holes and tie a knot such that the string is retained in the bottom of the cup.
Yes.
And then you pull the two cups taut.
Yes.
So that the string is tight between them.
Yes.
And putting pressure on the bottom of the cup. And then when you speak into one, it vibrates the bottom of that cup, and that therefore vibrates the string, which transfers the vibration and pulls on the other end of the cup, mm-hmm. where you can hear the sound through the cup.
Yes.
And so that's it. So imagine you make like one half of that. And so then you hold the can and you, you wet your fingers and you rub it on the leather lanyard such that it vibrates the bottom and it makes a very low growling noise.
Oh.
So that was the thing that you did as the older scout, is you made a bear can and you brought it with you, like, yep. on the hiking, camping fucking shit. Mm-hmm. And then you tried to scare the younger scouts by going out of your tent at night in the middle of the dark and go hide in the bush and make the growling noise. So I mean, 100% this is a kind of hazing, right? Like, is it particularly damaging? I don't know. I mean, it, you know, like, it's a little on the edge. I don't know. You tell me. Like, you know, anyway, I don't know. That wasn't really the point, is whether you could pass moral judgment on it. The more it was an example of a learned behavior. Like, the idea is, like, you know, it could have been that, or we could have been putting fucking dead salmon on our head running around in the river.
Right.
And I'll tell
Tipping
you what.
Yachts.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. Like, that wouldn't be so far out of the scope of being a Boy Scout at that age when you're like 13. You're like, oh, yeah, no, we're all fucking being ridiculous and putting dead salmon on our heads and running around in the woods.
Right.
I mean, look at fucking Monty Python. Like, they fucking 100%. Slap people in the face with a dead salmon.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's pretty funny.
It is funny.
Yeah.
I think the dead salmon hats thing is, like, a blast.
It's so funny.
I love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
I just imagine the older orcas just being like, God, just don't play with your food. Just fucking eat it. Get on with it.
Right, just eat it. You've been dragging that dead thing around for 3 days.
Yes. Starting to stink up the place.
Gross. Get rid of it or
the
eat
whole
it.
Pod smells like dead salmon now.
The whole pod smells like dead salmon. Oh, man.
Which only just encourages them, I'm sure.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think orcas are totally intelligent enough to be like, listen up, cetaceans. You know how you're like sinking all those yachts?
Yeah.
Okay, you should keep doing it because there's a point to it.
Right.
We just have to figure out how to speak to them.
Uh-huh.
Because I think they'd be on our side.
Didn't they? I thought they wrote some AI that learned to talk to, like, some animal.
Okay, so here, that was a really interesting story.
I didn't read that much about it. So
I should Google it, because the story was about how they had used, I think, an LLM, or I don't know, maybe it wasn't an LLM, maybe it was a different other type of AI. But what they had done is they developed it for use with whales to try understand the context of what whales are saying to each other, sort of like linguistically. A bunch of people are going to freak out if they ever heard our podcast and heard me say linguistically in reference to a whale, because
I get you.
A lot of people don't think whales have language. But anyway, this group of researchers thinks that they do and used an AI to understand what the whales were saying to each other.
Right.
And to try and respond in kind with it, like, whale language that made sense in the context of a reply.
Right.
And so they were basically trying to learn what whales say to each other and then use that same sound to respond to the whales from the side of the humans.
Right.
And so they, like, this to me is fucking mind-blowing, right? Like, not terribly surprising. I mean, I think, first of all, there's, like, baked in assumptions. One, whales have language. Two, it's knowable. Three, through technology.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, maybe. So, like, all of that seems legit to me. But the whole reason that they did this was because they're kind of on, like, a SETI mission. Like, they're trying to find extraterrestrial life.
Okay.
And their hope is that, like, not only will they recognize it when they stumble across it, but that they'll be able to, like, use AI to communicate with it.
Okay.
And so, like, I'm just kind of like, but wait a second, though. You fucking talked to whales?
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah, go back again.
Like,
wait.
That's its own, like, really cool thing. And it kind of feels like you're glazing over that to get to this future hypothetical in which we can even recognize what a foreign life form might look like from another planet.
Right.
From another planet.
Oh, see, but this feeds into my whole theory about the fucking aliens being appealing to the topic of.
Yeah.
Like, when we were talking about with Damon earlier about like how the evolution of the History Channel.
Oh, right.
And
yes.
And it was like, oh, what's the latest thing that it's done, like, in terms of, because it started with, like, World War II,
and that was the target demographic, was people who were super interested in World War II, and then, like, they, like Damon said, it got the, like, the nickname of, like, the Hitler Channel or whatever,
because
it was just so much about Hitler
Nazis,
and then, like, they moved away from that toward, like, a different sort of historical era, but they kind of like just got all obsessed with UFOs.
Right. And that's what, that was my argument was right. Like, oh, the UFO, they, once they hit it's UFOs, the next... they were like, oh, that's what appeals to the next generation that's right. watching the History Channel.
Yes.
Which I would argue is probably going to be the last generation to watch the History Channel because it's like we're rapidly leaving appointment TV.
Yeah. Because
like
internet.
For most of us, we left it like 20 years ago, but
yeah,
lots of people are now like, oh, we're leaving appointment TV.
I remember the cable company that we got our internet from was always trying to get me to buy cable yeah. TV. And I'm like, but I have the internet.
Right.
Like you guys just sold me the thing that cancels out the other thing that you're trying to sell me.
Right. It's like, I remember at one point having a conversation with like the fucking sales rep about, like, you know, I was in college, like getting broadband.
Yeah.
And he was pushing it. And I was like, dude, I don't even own a television.
Right. I didn't own a TV for a long time.
I can't hook this up to a thing that will make it work for
right.
me. Right. I was like, what do you mean? I was like, What do you mean?
What do I mean?
I'm never buying cable. I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Go away.
I'm starting over from scratch.
With
the internet.
Exactly. With the internet. Anyway, the fucking aliens
yes.
and the thing about talking to the whales is like, I wonder if they were like, no, but we need to get funded, and aliens gets funded. Talking to whales doesn't get funded.
No, because then some jackass is going to go on TV and be like, you know what they're spending money on? Talking to whales.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
right. Like. Yeah, because what
right.
could that possibly be worth, right?
I'll bet you're right. I should just like Google it and find that story so that right. we can, I don't know. But yeah, it was, I just remember.
I don't know. I'm just.
I just remember yeah. reading it and only getting about halfway through the story before they like switched over to, and this is important because maybe someday we might talk to aliens.
Right.
And I was like, it's important for its own sake. Like you've just bridged yes. a communication divide that has persisted like maybe as long as there's been people in whales, right? Like
right, yeah, like a really long time.
So like is there somebody writing about how important the whale thing is? Because like they just shift gears to like, oh, aliens. And I'm just like, this is kind of batshit to me.
I wonder, like, here's a funny thing that occurred to me is like they talk to whales, but really it's the equivalent of having like a baby talk conversation.
Yeah.
With two adults who are like, oh, yeah, like, okay, we'll like acquiesce to your nonsense for a few minutes, but we're going to go back and have an adult conversation again. And so, like, the takeaway out on the human side is like, I mean, yeah, you could barely call it language. Like, they basically sort of like grunt and point.
Yeah.
Which, and from the whale's point of view, they were like, well, yeah, that's what you were doing, and that's all we could really get across,
right?
Because you can't speak very well,
right?
Anyway, I don't know. I mean, who fucking knows? It's funny because like I think it, I'd be interested to see like what they actually learned from that.
Yeah,
because that seems like a big deal.
I know, this is what I'm saying. Like it just like I can see for funding reasons why you would have to be like, look, this is really about the search. Ostensibly, it's about whales, but right. really, it's about the search for extraterrestrial life and our ability to communicate right. with it.
We haven't found them yet, but we thought maybe we'd talk to some other shit around us.
Right.
There's some whales over here that maybe might have something to say. Which
so,
is
okay.
probably like, can you guys get all these fucking loud ass fucking boats out of the water? It's maddening.
So this person on the internet on Hacker News. So it was Earth.com was the original article that says scientists have a 20-minute conversation with a humpback whale. And somebody wrote, terrible article. The crucial info that's missing from the article is that they used AI to translate whale language to human and then from human to whale again. So there was, in fact, a conversation mediated by AI, a lot like using Google Translate to talk to a whale. Wait for a better article on it. So maybe the article was terrible. I'm not really sure. Like I said, I didn't read the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because I kind of got disappointed when I got to the part where they were like, and the whole reason we talked to a whale was because of extraterrestrials. And I was like, oh, man.
right?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it just seemed like to bury the lead a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, turns out alchemy is possible. We invented gold, and we did it to make earrings.
Right.
Like, that's not why you would do that. Like, I'm sorry. Alchemy is correct, and you managed to turn lead into gold, and you're really excited because you can make earrings out of it. Like, this right. is miraculous. Like, you're missing yes. the point.
Right.
So the American Museum of Natural History allegedly published a transcript
of the conversation.
Yeah, but I'm scrolling down and I'm trying to see here. It's like narrator. Oh, here's a guy named Jeremy. Jeremy Baramy.
Was the whale's name Jeremy? Or no, this is a transcript of like a discussion about it.
I guess so. I thought, you know, it's like, this is the part of the problem, right? This is why you're like, I don't even know if this is a real story, because like the internet's real sparse on it. And usually every fucking news feed seizes on the same story and you're getting it from 60 different angles.
Right.
And like, everybody's just directly ripping off the text of the last article without attributing any of it. And you're like, I don't know where does from scratch end and begin?
Right.
Like, who wrote this article? How deep is this scratch? So like, I can't really see here. Like, NPR did a story and said sperm whale families talk a lot and researchers are trying to decode what they're saying, but that's a different story about talking to whales than the one that we were just talking about. So yeah, I don't really know.
There's no way to know. You can't.
You can't. Have you tried to know how to talk to a whale?
You can't.
Let's see here. Okay, here's the article from Earth.com.
Okay.
AI helps humans have a 20-minute conversation with a humpback whale named Twain. Now I have a million pop-ups and I can't read the actual story. Because the internet is garbage. And we should all lay off of it for a while.
I'm looking at it from here and it's like, there's
half
a fucking a pop-up like popped up on the side. It's not a pop-up. But I mean, it's like the fucking ad like covers half the article.
Yeah, it was like some dumb shit about
and you can't
Trump
like
family.
Click it away. Anyway. Right.
So in a remarkable encounter off the coast of Alaska, human scientists had what they describe as a conversation with a humpback whale named Twain. Dr. Brenda McCowan from the University of California, Davis was at the heart of this unexpected exchange. Dr. McCowan and her team, known as Whale SETI, right? Whale, the word whale, SETI, SETI, which is about like the search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yep.
That's what SETI stands for. So Dr. McCowan and her team, known as Whale SETI, have been studying how humpback whales communicate. They're aiming to understand whale communication systems. They have complex social systems and unique behaviors. They create tools like nets made out of bubbles to catch fish. They extensively communicate through songs and social calls. So I guess they say, because of current limitations on technology, an important assumption of the search for extraterrestrial intelligence is that extraterrestrials will be interested in making contact and so target human receivers. So this important assumption is certainly supported by the behavior of humpback whales. They engaged with whales, learned how to detect and understand intelligent signals. So apparently an academic journal, Peer 3, not P-I-E-R, which would be hilarious because of the whale reference, but P-E-E-R and then the number 3, published an article titled Interactive Bioacoustic Playback as a Tool for Detecting and Exploring Non-Human Intelligence, Conversing with an Alaskan Humpback Whale. So now we know the title of it, and we could actually look that up on Google Scholar.
Woohoo.
The researchers plan to use mathematics and various forms of artificial intelligence, specifically information theory and machine learning, to measure how complex the whale's communication is. So, like, why should humans care about humpback whales? They're fascinating. They're recognized by their long pectoral fins and knobbly heads. They travel great distances. They migrate 5,000 miles between breeding and feeding grounds.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yep. Yeah, that's crazy.
Songs are complex, almost hunted to extinction, face threats. SETI Institute, main job to analyze data from space. They're also, let's see, they host lectures, workshops, et cetera, et cetera. So the encounter with Twain isn't just a fascinating story about humans and a whale. It's a step toward understanding intelligence in all its forms. And maybe by communicating with whales, they can develop tools that would help us recognize and understand messages from extraterrestrials someday.
Right.
So that's kind of like, that's basically it for the article. I really skimmed it and hit you with the bullet pointed highlights there. And that was it. So like, they don't say a whole lot. Like the person on the Reddit board or whatever, like they totally didn't explain what the fuck they were doing in this article at all.
Right.
So I guess maybe like read the paper. I'll see if I can find it here.
This is the problem with getting off topic, but also wanting to be deeply detailed.
Yes. Like so here's the abstract of their paper.
Yeah.
Again, the paper is interactive bioacoustic playback as a tool for detecting and exploring non-human intelligence, conversing with an Alaskan humpback whale.
Yeah.
And you can like find this on scholar.google.com. So an adult female humpback whale known as Twain in Southeast Alaska, had a 20-minute ad hoc acoustic and statistical exchange between the broadcast of a recorded contact call known as a whoop throp, with call responses by Twain revealed in an intentional human-whale acoustic and behavioral interaction. Our results show Twain participated both physically and acoustically in three phases of interaction. Phase one, engagement. Phase two, agitation. Phase three, disengagement. Independently determined by blind observers reporting on surface behavior and respiratory activity of the interacting whale, a close examination of both changes to the latency between Twain's calls, so like the distance between them, temporally, the time, the amount of time that passes between calls, and the temporal matching to the latency of the exemplar across phases indicated that Twain was actively engaged in the exchange during phase one, less so during phase two, and disengaged during phase three. These results, while preliminary, point to several key considerations for the effective playback design, namely the importance of salient, dynamic, and adaptive playbacks that should be utilized in experimentation with whales and other interactive non-human species. Right. So really what this paper is about is optimizing the methodology of communicating with whale.
Right.
And not really about the fact that they can communicate with a whale.
Right.
Which seems to be like they already knew that.
Right.
Because they had to get to the point where they thought that they had a viable communication tool already.
Right. Yes.
So they must have been working on this for some time. So this is kind of like news and also not news.
Right.
I guess.
Right.
Yeah, I guess it's probably a really interesting paper. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's huge.
Yeah. Well, not right now.
No. Well, eventually I'll read it, but not right now. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So I guess like that's pretty fucking interesting. I mean, if you would think that like if you could crack one whale language, you could probably at least have a starting point for cracking the rest of them, right?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Because what you're talking about is not the end case of it being a whale. You're talking about like the structure of the communication itself and whether you can observe that and generalize from it.
Right.
Enough to like put it into practice.
Right, right.
Interesting.
I was just thinking about I was like, oh, well, like how smart could whales be? Like what do? They eat one place and they go fucking like reproduce 5,000 miles away at another place and they just do that over and over again.
Yeah.
And then I was like, man, I mean, how smart could you be to just like every day get up and like drive fucking far away and do a thing and then come back home every day?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. That's just like what we do.
Right.
Like most of us.
Yes. That's like exactly the deal. Like this is what I'm saying. The distance between what people do and what whales do is not very far at all because like there's, you know,
like arguably they're harder working than I am. I fucking walk downstairs and sit at my computer all day. Like,
Anyway. Yeah. You're not swimming 5,000 miles anywhere.
No, nope. They're like, oh, but the fucking krill up there, it's fucking amazing.
Like, here's something that's incredibly amazing. There's a giant bald eagle's nest on a telephone pole, like maybe 20 miles north of my house. Maybe not even 20 miles north of my house.
Okay.
And it's visible from the highway. It's been there for fucking ever.
I think I saw it.
Do
I feel like
you know how to build a fucking eagle's nest on top of a pole that will withstand like tornadic weather every year after year after year?
Oh, 100%. Super easy. First you put the pole up.
Right.
Then you attract the eagle.
There you go.
Sorry.
There you go.
Solved. Check and mate, you liberal cuck.
I'm so glad you worked that in. Oh my God. So yeah, the whale thing, that's cool. I mean, I just, my whole roundabout thing here is like, can we use the whale talker to go talk to these orcas about their hats? Because I really want to know all about this.
I want to get, spill the tea on everything.
Yes, and I want to be able to communicate the very essential nature of what the orcas are doing when they're crashing a yacht, and I want to encourage them to continue. Right. Please don't stop. I wonder how far back that goes. Like, how long have whales been like smashing into boats for the shit of it?
Right. I mean, I have to imagine that it's always been a thing.
Probably.
Since we've been boating. Since man has put boat in the water and gone out there, like, sea animals fuck with it. Like, it's in their environment.
Yeah. What's this?
Like, sea lions are curious. Mm-hmm. Dolphins are curious. Like, right. All kinds of animals are really curious.
Yeah.
In different ways. And, like, some of them are looking for food. Some of them are just interested.
We just watched a thing about a crow. Who is like the people who work with this crow, she's in captivity.
Okay.
And I don't, what? Mark Rober was the person on YouTube who did the thing about it.
Yeah.
He set up a series of challenges for this crow to like puzzles that she had to work through.
Yeah.
And then she would like earn prizes and rewards and things like that.
Yeah.
Right? Am I explaining it correctly? And so, he confronted this crow with, he basically put the crow in an escape room.
Oh, interesting.
And she was presented with challenges and puzzles that some of which were similar to things that she's experienced in her enclosure with her trainers and her like researchers prior to being in Mark Roper's room.
Right.
But then like, there were other things that she was like expected to intuit.
I see.
That she may not have seen something directly analogous before.
Right, right.
He gave her like a series of six or seven tests or something like that. And in order to, she had to solve each one in sequence in order to move on to the next thing.
Right.
And right. When they introduced her to this like escape room, she kind of just started going to work on stuff.
Really?
Yeah, and if she kind of stalled out in between puzzles, they had the option after a period of time to like shine a spotlight
on,
and she would just go straight over to it and start working on whatever was under the spotlight. It was really fascinating.
Wow.
And she like clearly understands, like when I think about how much you inherently have to understand about how physics
right
works and like all of this stuff, it's not just so simple as a crow knows how to drop a pebble into a glass of water to raise the water level and get the thing inside of it out of there through displacement, right?
Right.
Like, the fact that the crow knows that that works means that the crow knows something about physics.
Right.
Like, that's really fucking fascinating to me. And it's like, it just shows me, I think that, like, I this whole idea that people are so much smarter than non-human creatures is really short-sighted.
Right.
Like really, really short-sighted.
I mean, I even feel like on the flip side of that, like when you, like when people are like, oh, like a dog, like a dumb dog or something. Like,
yeah.
Like if you've been around dogs, you kind of know what I mean. It's like, oh, they're kind of dumb sometimes.
Yeah.
But like that in an of itself implies that they have intelligence,
right?
To lack, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like it's sort of,
yeah,
you know, like they have some. It's just not enough for me to not call them a dumb dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that with great love for all dogs. They're fucking fantastic. But
I love it when dogs pick up a stick that's too big to fit through a door.
Oh, right? I love it so much. Oh, God, they're so
great. And they kind of get like stuck.
I love, yeah, they're just yes, yes.
Oh, God, good stuff. Oh,
yeah.
So, yeah, whale chats. I think it would be really fascinating to figure out, like, how to talk to an octopus.
Sure.
They seem real smart.
Yeah.
Did we talk about, like, the cats that use the talking pad on the podcast yet?
No.
I don't, so I
no,
met I don't
this think
woman
so. Yeah.
whose cats use assistive technology to speak to her.
Okay.
And well, she has two cats and one of them uses the talk pad,
yeah.
but the other cat won't have anything to do with it, which is like perfect. I'm sure it's not because the cat doesn't understand how to use it, but because it chooses not to.
Right. Exactly.
Obviously.
Like, no.
So like the
no
cats,
good will come of this.
Yeah. She was like hanging out one day. She told me that I met this woman at a craft fair and I bought something from her. And she was telling me the story as I was like checking out. So she has these cats. And they were out on her deck.
Uh-huh.
And they had something cornered.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, oh, no. And like ran out there to help whatever they had sort of like seized upon.
Yeah.
And she got the cats away from it. And she puts the cats in the house where they can still see out the window to what she's doing out on the deck.
Uh-huh.
And they had a little flying squirrel. We have flying squirrels in Minnesota, so that's like not the crazy thing isn't like what talking squirrel. No, uh-huh. It's like the flying squirrels live here. They're like native. It's not
right. Right.
So anyway, this little flying squirrel was like, but unharmed. And so it like left.
Uh huh.
And when she went back inside, the cat that uses the trackpad was like super agitated and kept saying snack outside, snack outside. Which I just thought was like super great. Like
that is really great. Yeah.
What a literal way to like
uh-huh.
interpret a flying squirrel. Like that's my dinner and it's outside and I want to go out and eat it. Like let me outside, my snack's outside. It's so great. Snack outside. I just if I ever end up with another cat again, I think I'm gonna get one of those.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'll be able to tell whether the cat's gonna be into it or not. Like you can tell these things, right?
Sure.
I wonder what fascinating things Chuck would have had to say if we gave him a talking pad.
Yeah, he was pretty, he was really kind of very engaged with humans.
He was like super with it.
Yeah.
He was a great cat.
Yep.
I would love to like, I mean, I would wait with such great anticipation for the day that my pet said something even remotely philosophical to me.
Uh-huh.
Like some ontological question about like, who am I? Why am I here?
Uh-huh.
You know, whatever.
Yes.
What does it all mean?
What does it all mean?
Oh man. I wonder like, I don't know anything about these animal talking pads. Like they're a series of like these, they're hexagonal.
Yeah.
And so they like fit adjacent to one another in a pattern and like
right.
they're different color coded. And so it must be like groupings of words or something that are like color coded, you know, like food is red or like,
I mean, they are.
We could Google it, but I'm just.
Yeah, the ones that I've seen and the little I've looked at, my understanding is you kind of can arrange them.
Okay, so you can like feel it out and customize it.
Yeah, and they're basically, if you're listening to this and you just have no idea what we're talking about, they're like, if you've ever seen like the.
They're called Fluent Pet.
Yeah,
but
if you've ever seen like the staples like that was easy button or whatever it is that you push, like they look like that button a little bit, like that kind of concept where you push it and then it says the word
right.
out loud.
Yes,
and it's kind of big and easily pushed, right? And then they're on those hex floor mats that you can rearrange and move around and stuff.
So like. Fluent Pet looks like very similar to what I've seen pictures of.
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably multiple companies making them at this point.
At this point, like, there has to be. You can get 12 Fluent Pet speak up buttons with audio.
Uh-huh.
So they're pre-programmed. You can get 12 of the buttons, so 12 words for $140.
Jesus, that's expensive.
I know, right?
That seems... anyway.
That seems like highway robbery.
You want a talking button, I get you a talking button for way cheaper.
Right. Don't ask me how. I mean,
like 3 hours.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Fluent Pet looks like they kind of dominate the market here.
Yeah.
But, like, Washington Post just published an article not long ago about, like, is this, like, just some dumb thing, or are pets really communicating? They're like, it actually seems like dogs are totally capable of doing this.
Interesting.
I mean, this just makes a lot of sense to me. Sure. Because the whole reason that a bunch of animals don't talk to humans is because they don't have fucking vocal cords.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they lack the biological equipment necessary to, like, speak words.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that they could if they were equipped.
Like, yeah, like dogs. Well,
I mean, they would have evolved to speak if they
had learn
cords,
to hear and correctly identify like words that are being said.
Yeah.
Like there's that fairly famous like border collie that guy trained like 170 something maybe words, and it was like he knew the names of like all these different toys, so he could just say go get the giraffe. No, the orange giraffe. Yeah. Oh, okay. Like, you know what I mean? Yep. Like, and the dog could just fucking, but of course, like fucking border collies and like when they're that engaged, the dog, he's like, it's a little exhausting.
Yeah.
The dog just wants to do it all day long.
See, but like, oh my God, this is kind of like my point, right? Like if you suddenly were able to communicate with people around you, whereas you've been like, deaf or like mute and unable to speak or something, and then all of a sudden you were able to communicate for the first time, and like even though you've been around,
right,
like why would you not want to talk all the time?
Sure.
Yeah. Oh my God,
right?
Exhausting. Like that's interesting to me that he said that. Like where are you setting your expectations?
Right.
Like if my dog was eager to talk to me, that's all I would do.
Yeah. I mean, he was just kind of pointing out how engaged the dog was. Like, he wasn't like, oh God, it's like, it's more just like, be mindful that like, if this is a thing you're going to take on as an endeavor, like it's not trivial.
Yeah.
Like that dog is going to, you know, that creature potentially is going to have a lot of high energy around this thing. Yeah, you can't doing. Just like you can't just fucking
stop talking to the dog.
Yeah, like yeah. So, and I mean, border collies are also working dogs. Like they're very much like they're driven. They need to work. Like you don't get a border collie and then be like, yeah, go sit on the couch.
I used to have a friend whose aunt and uncle had like some kind of herding dog, like a Briar or something like that, and the dog was like so involved that they had to like give it tasks to keep it occupied. So like when it was ready to eat, it would like it would get its own food.
Right.
They would like they had it set up so that it could like bring its own food bag out and like you know,
like dispense
like help in the process or whatever. And it could answer the phone.
Oh, awesome.
When the phone rang, it would go and knock it off the receiver and bring it.
No way.
Yeah. It had all of these like interactive tasks that it was in charge of. Like, oh, when the phone rings, the dog picks it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I remember.
I bet that dog was pretty happy. Like like dogs like that love to work.
What else can I do?
Yeah. Now what? Yeah. Now what are we doing?
Now what are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally get that.
Yep.
My God. I would ask my dog so many questions.
Right. Now what are you thinking about?
Right. How about now?
Right.
How about now? Yeah, like when I studied linguistics, one of the things that had not occurred to me before I studied linguistics is how important language is, because language is driven by necessity and like follows experiences that people have. Like you need to make up words for what just happened. And so language is a direct reflection of a particular group of language users, like view of what reality is made of.
Uh-huh.
And so when you like when languages die out, which is happening left and right, it really sucks, because along with it goes the capacity to accurately describe the experiences and the worldview of a whole group of people.
Yep.
Which is really shitty.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know that there's anything you can really do about it, but
no, there's
people who work in language preservation.
Yep.
So people are trying to do something about it, but like, I guess in the greater sense, is there, these things probably just happen all of the time, even sure. though because of the structure of our like modern,
right.
Basically capitalism and globalization. Yep. That's why the languages are dying out. And there's also a lot of politics involved in that too. But I just, when I sort of like had this revelation, like, oh, well, if you lose a language, then you lose a way of seeing the world.
Uh huh.
And the more ways of looking at things we have, the better equipped we are to deal with them. And so it's just like, that always bummed me out.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I think about.
I mean, this is kind of one of those things where the internet had such potential to like expose and record and preserve cultural identities and, mm-hmm. And history. But it feels like for as little that it does that, it's so much of it's just stomping on all of it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah, I mean, we have the technology to record. I can't remember what website it is. There's like a website that is basically just like a whole bunch of English dialect recordings. So you can like examples of, so you can hear like different native different speakers in different regions mm-hmm. speaking in different accents, which is really cool. But like for every one of those, there's like a million websites that are just stomping on all of it and being like, hey, like just give us some money.
Yeah.
And I'll stop flashing this shit at you, or I'll flash out at you harder, or whatever the fuck it is. Like, right. Just God,
flash at you harder. Beep, 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 beep.
Uh huh.
So intrusive. Let me just wheedle right into your brain.
Yeah.
These external computers are super annoying. What you need is a chip in your head.
Right. Yeah. Just mainline that shit.
This also makes me think about like, the fact that the place in Minneapolis that we live has been like continuously inhabited for like 14,000 years or something like that.
Right.
But like you don't see any of that because all of the signs and symbols that we use to label things that tell you what to think about them reflect like European colonizers' views of the same right. space. And so right. like you it on the surface of everything is this like Eurocentric
like place names
American and... crust.
Yes, right.
And then beneath that is like this huge depth of history.
Right.
That like is made completely like invisible, like obscured by this superficial layer of like labels and words and names and things that didn't come, that like very recently got applied to the same spaces or like covered up these spaces.
Uh-huh.
Like they used to we had a lake that was called Binimakaska, and then they changed it to Lake Calhoun, and they named it after a senator who like hunted indigenous people.
No.
Yeah, he's from South Carolina, right? He's not even from the area in Minneapolis. So for the longest time when I was growing up, it was like, what is that over there? Oh, it's Lake Calhoun, right?
Yeah.
But it's only been Lake Calhoun for like a couple hundred years.
Oh.
And for 14,000 years prior to that, it was Binimakaska.
So
they like renamed it. Yeah, B-D-E.
B-D-E, Biddy.
M-A-K-A-S-K-A, I think is how it's spelled. It's like three words. Let me...
Yeah. That's cool, though. I mean, it's ridiculous that they did that. I mean, of course they did. Of course they did.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the largest lake in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and part of the city's chain of lakes. That's so, cool. Yeah, BDE space MAKA space SKA, all capitalized with the first letters.
Gotcha.
And I can't remember.
Binimakaska.
Yeah. I mean, that's not, I'm not stressing it correctly because I have not been taught how to pronounce it by people who
speak. Yeah, I mean, I understand that and hopefully our listeners will be sympathetic. Yeah. That's really interesting. I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff that they're renaming to back to indigenous names for stuff.
Yeah.
They're also rewilding the river, maybe, and like taking out. Okay, so Bidet Makaska is the Dakota language.
Okay.
And it's also indicated here that it's Lakota or Dakota. So it means Lake White Earth or Lake White Bank, a name that was probably given by the Iowa who inhabited the area until the 16th century.
Wow.
And there might have been other names too, but yeah. So there's like there's a few things. There's like these huge landmarks that have been really important to like sustaining life over an extended period of time. Yeah. So people from the North American continent came to the what is now Minneapolis area.
Yeah.
And like gathered there for different, like, I, for lack of a better word, like congresses, like they'd get together and have these like political meetings and exchanges.
Right.
And then like people who were giving birth would also travel to like the area right where we live in order to do that. Like it's this crazy. And then there's this huge river. It's the start of the Mississippi isn't far away. And then there's also like a spring just a little bit south of where we live that is like a cold spring that comes up out of the ground that also has an indigenous name and I can't remember what it is, but these things have been like super important to sustaining life for a really, really long time. And so yeah. There's all these like names for all this stuff because it was these important places for lots of people to come to. And I kind of feel cheated in a way that there's like this super interesting, super rich history of this place.
Right.
And we're like, nah, it's Lake Calhoun. Who's Mr. Calhoun? Oh, he was this like senator from South Carolina who used to like hunt down Native American people, indigenous people in North America. And so we named the lake after him. It's just like, again, with like the British Empire, right? It's like, you guys like went to all these amazing places where people had these incredible ways of doing things and thinking about things. And then you wiped them out and replaced them with the most backwater, mediocre ass shit. Just so crappy. Like such a terrible substitute.
Right.
I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, should we, do we have any like closing segment?
No, I don't know. We're both in the same state at the same time again.
Yes. So that's cool. Also, we met
a bunch of your friends.
We met a bunch of my friends. Also, some of them listen to the podcast.
Yeah. So, everyone.
Yeah. Hi.
Super nice to meet you.
Yeah. If you made it this far, write us an email.
Yep.
Email Dana. So Dana is the CEO and founder of this. I think sometimes we say co-founder.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's her fault.
Tell her all about it.
When you have all kinds of thoughts about why you don't like this podcast or whatever you want to say about it, send it to Dana, Dana at fcbm.io. And if you email that address, then she'll get it and then she'll either pass it on to us or she'll treasure it forever or she'll, I don't know what she'll do with it, but
yeah, it's going to be great.
So yeah, it'll be really fun.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Bye.